Certo.
Claro. And I'm that kind of person that, like, when it's sunny, I really want to sort of have the most of it.
Yeah, I know. It's so beautiful here, you guys. I mean, but isn't it always this warm here?
No.
Is this the beginning of the good season?
This is really the beginning of the good season. And yeah. I mean,
everyone seems so happy in the streets.
Yeah, but that's because when you have 9 months of cold and darkness, right, and you get this, it's like euphoria.
Well, it's funny because we stopped at this gas station at 5 in the morning, and I got out, and it was like this beautiful lake and beautiful trees, and it was so warm. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
I was like, this is like paradise.
And it is like paradise this time of the year.
Yeah.
But then we get the coldness and everything, yeah. And I'm really affected. I'm that kind of person. I'm really affected by by the seasons. Mm-hmm. So when I get this, it's like, I don't know, it's like I live again.
Yeah, well, that's what it is, the seasons.
After 9 months.
It's like you're like a plant or something.
You flower
in the summer.
Yeah, that's how I feel. We only have 15 minutes, so I sort of dive into it, if that's right. I read an article.
I'm so sorry, but I'm a little hot right here because
okay.
I'm wearing black.
Okay.
Do you mind?
No, you want to sit in there?
Do you mind? Because I'm going to start sweating.
That's terrible.
That's bad for my face.
Should we sit in here then?
Yeah.
Have a seat. Since it's radio, it doesn't really matter.
Right. I know, but just for later.
You look all right, though.
It's so rough. But I look rough. It's okay.
It's okay.
Okay.
I read an article somewhere that you wanted to be sort of bridge between eras, different eras. What did you mean by that?
I was talking actually specifically about the way I felt my relationship to be to New York City in a way, because there was such an exciting life there in the 80s. And then there was this sort of resurgence of excitement in the early part of this century. And the 90s was sort of a dark, for me and for where I came from in my community, it was sort of a dark, shadowy period. And coming into our early 20s and the beginning of the 90s, it was kind of like the way you talk. Talk about winter here. You know, the 90s felt like a very long winter. A very long winter here. Indies into air community work. This insurgent are in the A York. The way it's talking.
What did you mean by that?
I was talking actually specifically about the way I felt my relationship to be to New York City in a way, because there was such an exciting life there in the 80s. And then there was this sort of resurgence of excitement in the early part of this century. And the 90s was sort of a dark, for me and for where I came from in my community, it was sort of a dark, shadowy period. And I was saying that I felt a little bit like a bridge between two eras in New York. You know, my generation coming into our early 20s and the beginning of the 90s, it was kind of like the way you talk about winter here. You know, the 90s felt like a very long winter for New York City for a lot of reasons. But
for what reasons, for specifically for you then?
Well, I think there was global reasons, like we were coming up to the millennium and there was sort of a lot of fear about that. But also from the community I came from, it was sort of reeling from the impact of AIDS and from... it was just sort of a shifting time in culture, and a sort of it was a time when not many things could come to fruition. You know, it was a time, unlike in the last 2 years, it's really felt, especially in New York, that a lot of things that have even been waiting under the ground for 10, 15 years are even, and new things, all sorts of different, many generations of work are sort of flourishing right now.
Why do you think that happens now then?
I'm not exactly sure. It's kind of, I think it's something to do with a collective momentum. I think enough, and also it was a window. There's just a window, sort of a magical window that sort of opened. It could be in response to the political climate there. It could be as a result of 9/11. It sort of shook a lot of artists awake. It woke people up in a strange way, especially in New York City. It put people very much in the moment again. It sort of shook people out of their depression and shocked people awake. And also this new generation of kids came in, and really people like Devendra Banhart and Coco Rosie and Animal Collective and all these new artists, very visionary artists, sort of helped to create a new path that a lot of work that might have been waiting for its opportunity to come forward.
But Do you think it that way, that it's sort of the time is ready for some people to come, and then anybody can sort of break that? Or do you think that specific artists sort of breaks no matter what time it is? Do you see what I mean?
I think there's both things are true. You know, I think, you know, in my case, I think I'm very much a product of this time. I feel like it's very much this moment in time that opens a door for someone like me or the work that I do, and it's very much my relationship to the community is very important, even in the way I've been introduced. Mm-hmm. You know, has been so much in the under the umbrella or the wing of a lot of other artists that have ushered me forward. You know, so from young artists like Devendra to Lou Reed, you know, a lot of people have sort of nurtured the notion that I would be put into the public eye.
For me, it's like postmodernism are sort of, you know, breaking through and coming into all different parts of the cultural scene, and that it's very open to people who sort of bridge between different sorts of culture, but also bridge between genres, and maybe also the whole gender politics, I mean, meaning the whole queer sort of thing, and that's very sort of positive in one way. But do you feel that this is just a trend and that it sort of might go back?
Like, which artists are you specifically thinking of when you talk about those two different ideas?
I'm thinking it's with Swedish artists, but I see lots of Swedish artists who are both artists and then they do a bit of performance and they do a bit of acting and they're a bit of everything. Could you see that?
Sort of multi applications, yeah. Multitude of applications. That's interesting. Well, for me, I feel like I belong to quite a local scene, you know, like something that happened very much in America. Like I feel a strong affinity with certain other artists, like William Baczynski, and there's a whole sort of school of people that seems like are coming to the surface. Also, it's very interesting to me because even artists that have died, a lot of artists from the late 80s and even work in history, historical kinds of work, has started to be documented and started to surface in a way that would never have been possible in the 90s. They made that documentary about Klaus Nomi, you know, the documentary about the Cockettes. All this stuff started to pour forward. You're talking about the queer stuff. But also there's some, a lot of the art students and a lot of the kids, not necessarily gay kids, are really attaching themselves to even that set of imagery. You know, it does seem very much like everything's up for grabs, and this new generation are visionary in that they've been able to really take advantage of that. You know, whereas my generation, you know, I'm in my early 30s, and, you know, I still felt like I very much belonged culturally to the 80s and the early 90s, which is when I spent my childhood and teenage years, you know, and the culture that I consumed was very much the culture of that era. Whereas now, the young people, they're really drawing from the last 50 years of culture, picking and choosing what it is that they'd like to listen to, whether it's like Harry Smith's folk music anthology, or, you know, late 70s this, or a mishmash of everything. You know, they're really using a century of information as their palette, you know, and I think that's very exciting.
And do you feel that that those people, and maybe you as well, then are sort of also breaking up the hierarchies on what's high culture, what's low culture, what's valuable, who's got power, who's not?
It's interesting because you take someone like Devendra as a perfect case in point, because I've really started to say about him, my perception of him is that he's a fine artist working in pop, you know, which is such a beautiful thing. You know, people say he's folk, but I think that's sort of, I think he's a very sophisticated artist, and he's like what you said, he's a gallery illustrator, you know, a gallery visual artist, fine artist, as well as a poet and a musician and a singer, and Joanne is the same way. They're such fine, Joanna Newsom, they're such fine craftspeople. Do you know what I mean? There's almost a set of sort of classical concerns that go way beyond the parameters of what we used to consider pop. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Devendra, this is true as a poet, you know. And I do think things are breaking down, but that's been going on for like 10 or 15 years just because of internet. You know, suddenly you've got like the most indie artists is on a level playing field with Beyoncé in terms of like accessibility.
Do you see yourself in that context as well? Or, I mean, it's not context because the context is sort of breaking down, but you know what I mean.
Well, it's interesting for me because, you know, I've been, as a musician, I always, in New York, was always sort of allied more with somehow art performance than I was in the music world. So, you know, like we did the Whitney Biennial last year. I was one of the artists of the Whitney Biennial, and we did... I think I've always been someone that sort of, because I came from a sort of experimental performance background, it was, for me, it was a segue to be perceived as a musician. Do you know what I mean? I was always sort of perceived as sort of performing artist, and or at worst, a cabaret artist, but that was never really my cup of tea. But I think in the last year, it seems like I've really made that transition. Now people are perceiving me as a musician, which is really exciting, because actually that's, for me, the basis of everything I've done.
You like to be perceived as a musician.
Yeah, that's what I am. So I think it's the truest assessment of my situation.
I like your song "Cripple and the Starfish" very much, and part maybe this is because I listened to it during a certain era when I was sort of down and low. But also, only the sort of first two chords of that song can make me cry.
Is this going to be a trouble?
Yeah.
Music.
Shall I?
Do you want to ask them to stop
for a minute? Yeah. Ursäkta, kan inte ni bara... Jag håller på att göra en intervju. Yeah, it makes me cry just to say... Nej, men... Okay. How do you feel about that? Did you sort of... Because I've heard other people that you sort of create very strong emotions with your music.
Well, it's funny, I'll tell you a secret about that song just because I'm in Sweden. But I wrote that song when I was like 20 years old. You know, I wrote that song a long time ago. It was the theme song to a play that I did, a musical, sort of a midnight musical I wrote called Cripple and the Starfish. But I wrote that song after listening to SOS by ABBA. About 1,000 times. I remember I was like 20 years old and I was listening to that song, SOS. So when you need me, darling, can't you hear me, SOS? And then I was like, I'll grow back like a starfish. I'll grow back. It's all, I mean, it's not like a criminal copy, but I mean, it's funny because years later I realized, oh my God, I could change the lyric and this would be an ABBA song.
So I'll tell them.
Please don't tell them.
No. Really, but I mean the whole sort of feeling of it is very, very far away from the ABBA song.
Yeah, but I love that song by ABBA so much. I guess that was sort of a manifesto song for me of a certain kind of vibe I was chasing. I'm not really there anymore, but I still include it in my catalog just because when I perform, just because people do respond, people have responded to it strongly, and it's kind of like. It's kind of like a Rubik's Cube when I just sort of pick it up and sort of turn it around and wonder what was going on, you know? Like I just try and find something, a path through it each time I do it. So, and it shifts as the years go by. Your path through songs changes and it has holds a different resonance.
But I mean the sort of inner side of you is still the same.
There's parts you can talk to and stuff that are the same, and parts that change a lot, you know.
But still, how does it feel that any song by you sort of creates those really strong emotions?
Well, you know, I tend to write songs from a place of very strong emotion, so on a certain level, it makes sense to me. Like if the song is succeeding, that it would sort of evoke for people. It's like a photograph of, do you know what I mean? That people would see the things that you were witnessing in your song. Do you know what I mean? So,
communicating.
Yeah, it's communication. So it's nice that people... But the thing I really like about it is the idea that people take from a song and find something that's useful for them. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Cripple and Starfish is a weird one because some of it, you know, this girl came up to us last night and they were like, we want to get the words to that song tattooed. And I was like, I can't think of a worse lyric to tattoo on your arm.
No, that's really, really depressing.
I was like, you guys, you have to, let's work on a different lyric. So then they're like, but we want it in your handwriting. So I wrote down, like, thank you for your love. How about that? That's a beautiful tattoo. Or, I love you so much. Here, try that. Try this one. Do you know what I mean? Like, parts of Cripple and Starfish make me a little uncomfortable, but it's just my values change as I get older.
It's depressing.
Part of that is depressing, but I find I'm also it's also an interesting challenge to find joyful ways to sing sad songs, and that's something that I've been experimenting with because it's a quality that I so admire in my favorite singers, and so I'm trying to learn better how to do some of that.
How do you do that? Think of something positive, or what?
You know, you act as if a little bit. You know, there's this phrase, act as if.
Yeah.
You know it?
Yeah.
You just try it. Yeah. Just try to approach something from seeking joy.
But can you feel that people are afraid of really, really strong emotions?
I don't know. I once said that in an interview, but I don't agree with myself anymore.
No, I think that's something that's changing as well.
Yeah, I really feel like people are... I've been shocked by people's receptiveness to me. Really shocked.
Why shocked?
I just didn't expect it. You know, it's exciting for me. You know, it's something I'd dreamed about, but I couldn't have quite imagined it.
What creates strong emotions for you?
For me, music. Like, I'm very, very invested in music. You know, I love to, as an audience member, I love to listen to music. And I just love the potential of an open space, a creative potential. In all forms, really excites me. You know, open room to dance around in, or a group of people, the potential for a group of people to do something differently, that's very exciting to me. Even if it's just sitting in a room making up a song, or really doing something, people shifting into a different gear and listening to each other in a different way is very exciting to me.
And is that something that you feel that you sort of create yourself?
It's something that I chase. You know, it's something that I am drawn to. You know, so I'm always seeking opportunities to participate in something like that.
But when you said that music sort of creates strong feelings for you, what kind of music would that be?
I'm a real singer-oriented person. I really love singers. Mm-hmm. So I love a lot of American soul singers. You know, I'm always listening to those. We were listening to Nina Simone live in the car on the way here, and it was just like, oh, my God, I just can't believe these songs. I can't believe this excitement. Mm-hmm. It's optimal.
But could any sort of other cultural things affect you as well?
Do you mean different arts and stuff?
Yeah, or films, or I don't know. Or nature, or as well. Like, I don't know, beautiful scenery.
Yeah, I love beautiful scenery. I love this dancer, Kazuo Ono. He's a Butoh dancer. He's like in his late 90s now. I don't think he's dancing much anymore, but he's really my favorite artist in the whole world. He really excites me. And
what makes you cry?
Those kind of things. And then just normal life things. You know, I'm a big crybaby. Like, I cried for Bridget Jones, too. Did you see that movie yet?
Yeah, I've seen it. And I'm just a sucker for those things as
Did
well.
You cry?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, you cried for Bridget Jones?
Yeah, but the thing is, I you know, it's like that when you sort of, I can see why I cry, and I can see how they sort of build it up dramatically, and still,
right, I cry.
I just buy it all.
You know, me too. I was on the plane with my friends, and I started crying so hard I had to go into the toilet to collect myself, because I related so much to her. But that's why I can't really watch scary movies. I can't watch Lars von Trier or whatever. You know what I mean? I can't watch movies that are too hardcore, because I get so upset.
Yeah, and if I see really scary movies, I have to sort of talk through the whole movie because I don't want to be, I don't want to get too involved, because then I'm just dead or something.
And it takes me days to recover. Mm-hmm. Yeah, movies are intense. That's like stepping into someone's dream. Music is one thing, but to step in visually like that too is really intense.
But I think you can work with that. I'm a radio person, so I mean, radio. I like, and that's why I like music as well, because you work with just one sort of sense, but it can be so powerful, because I mean, films are sort of two senses, but music, it can still be so powerful if you work really well with it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I'd like to make some movies.
Really? Yeah. What kind of movies?
I'm working on a movie with my friend Charlie Atlas. We're doing a show called Turning. We're going to make a movie of that. But it's going to be quite formal. It's going to be like a concert film.
Okay. Would you like to make sort of... Yeah, you got to go. Would you like to make sort of... I don't know, like a drama movie or something?
I think if my inclination would be to make sort of a little bit surrealist tableaus. Like, I have a lot of scripts I wrote that I would like to make films of. They're a little bit surreal, with music and just sort of pastoral, surreal journeys. A little bit like the album Journeys.
I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, thanks.
That's very postmodern.
Oh no.
Oh no. I was just kidding.